sort of the hardest part is trimming your website back to just its bare essence of what needs to be focused on, and just trying to find who is that one target market that you're talking to.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today I am joined by agency owner and Aussie superstar, Justin Meadows. We talk about building websites and selling websites and what it takes to deliver a successful project. Let's dive straight in. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast, and today I am joined by the one and the only Aussie star himself, Mr. Justin Meadows. How are you doing, Justin?
Pretty good, Pete. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm good. So I should say this is now 11 o'clock in the morning UK time when we're recording this, but it is like 10 p.m. where you are, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
By the sounds of it, you've had quite a long day.
Yeah, it has been a long day. So I'll be heading straight to bed after this.
You can go to bed thinking of me, the exactly. Dulcet tones of this English voice in your head.
It's always worth staying up for, having a chat with you, for sure.
You're too kind. I hasten to add, I wouldn't be up at like 10 p.m. talking to you when it's like 6 in the morning where you are. So, cool. Justin works or runs the company TuneWP. So, Justin, do you want to give a brief intro about who you are, where you're from? Obviously, you're from Australia. So, and what you do. That'd be great.
Sure, yeah. So, I'm from a small country town. It's actually like a tourist town that's near the ski resort. So one of the few ski resorts that Australia has.
Hang on, is that skiing on snow?
Yeah, that's right. We actually have some for a little bit of the year.
Yeah. All right. For the 5 minutes there's snow, you get some tourism going on. Brilliant.
That's right. Yeah. So that's where I live. So I'm near Melbourne, but when I say near, I'm 3 hours drive away. But it's nearby Australian standards. And coming from a small country town, I when I started getting into this online stuff, it was really hard to get in front of clients. Most of the bigger clients and big businesses and that sort of thing, they're down in Melbourne. They're a long drive away. So I needed to work out a business model that worked for me in my situation. So I started doing wholesale WordPress development services to other marketing agencies, so that way I could take a couple of trips down to Melbourne and build some relationships with a few marketing agencies, and then that would give me plenty of work as I'd be working with all of their clients. I've sort of done that for the last 8 years, and now I'm getting to a point where I've split off my business into two brands. So I have still have that white label wholesale WordPress development service, but I've also got a customer facing retail service as well, and that's tunedwp.com.
That's cool. So I'll pop a link to that in the show notes and people can go and check it out. But Justin and I actually met at a business conference about a month ago now, wasn't it, mate?
Yeah, it's a few weeks.
Yeah, it was, and he decided to come to England in November to see the best of it and miss the best Australian weather. Although we had quite a good weekend, and then you went on a bit of a road trip, didn't you? So you saw a bit of Europe while you were in this part of the world.
That's right. Yeah, I thought I'd make the most of it. Checked out Belgium. I've been looking forward to trying some Belgian beers and straight at the source. And that was the highlight.
Oh, good. So it didn't disappoint then.
No. And actually, yeah, the weather did hold out. When I first arrived, I it was rainy and miserable, and I really got what I expected arriving in London. but actually, it cleared up for the rest of the time that I was there. So the weather was kind to me.
So the reason I mentioned that was because at the conference it was kind of the we were all there and we were all thinking about our own businesses, and it was kind of that customer facing business that you were kind of planning out a bit more in your head, wasn't it, while you were there?
Yeah, exactly. Because I've released it only a month ago, so I only had it public for a couple of weeks in the lead up to that conference. So it was the thing that I was focusing on the most, and I got a lot out of that conference actually. Youthpreneur conference is a fantastic thing. I'd highly recommend it to everyone who's living closer, and even on the other side of the world, it's worth going to check it out.
There is a Youthpreneur Facebook group. and or a summit Facebook group, and we were sort of, a lot of people put pictures up when they were leaving their front door to attend the event, and you were like 5 days ahead of the event. You were like, yeah, I'm on my way. I'll see you on Saturday.
Yep. Yeah, it took me quite a while to get there, and I leave my house and go to Melbourne and stayed there for the night, and then got on a plane the next morning, and then I went to Sydney and Singapore and London, and I made sure that I landed with enough time to get over my jet lag before the event started, so I wasn't falling asleep during the speakers.
I always find jet lag coming west is easier than jet lag going east. I don't know if you find that. I don't know why that is, but anyway.
Yeah.
Just how it is.
I found it was horrible both ways, really.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe we need to start a travel podcast to discuss different methods of getting. If anybody out there who's listening is joining this now, this isn't about travel, okay? We really are going to talk about like marketing and stuff in a minute.
Yep.
So I did a whole podcast with Lee Jackson, and like for the first 12 minutes he was telling me about his trip to the dentist, and it was all a bit weird. I'll see if I can dig it out and stick a link to that in the show notes, because it was quite a funny conversation. Anyway, we digress. So the obviously now, I guess dealing with agencies who need websites delivering, obviously you're working with people that they deal with websites every day. Okay, they don't code them, but they know about assets and about the process that needs to go through, and you're really fitting in to be a small piece of that jigsaw. Whereas now going customer focused, you're all of a sudden going to start dealing with people that don't deal with the website building process or production process every day. So what's kind of the big difference there, or what are the things that the challenges that you're facing with some of your new clients because they're not part of that process? What are some, I suppose, some tips almost that you could that you could give people that are thinking about building a website?
Yeah, sure. And actually, to be honest, I find that there's a scale to it, but I find that I'm getting just as many of the same sorts of problems dealing with business owners directly as I am dealing with marketing agencies. Because although marketing agencies they have a deeper understanding of the marketing side of things, they don't. I'm often working with people where websites isn't their focus, so that they're working with me because they don't really get the website part of things, and they may be focused on paid traffic or design or something like that, you know, branding side of things, as opposed to the technical side. Or yeah, you sort of run into the similar kind of problems, I find. And I think that one of the biggest things, and the biggest things I see, is that people try to do too much with their website, and it is hard, because quite often businesses have a lot of aspects to their business that they really want to show off and that sort of thing. But the sort of the hardest part is trimming a website back to just its bare essence of what needs to be focused on, and just trying to find who is that one target market that you're talking to, what is the one message that you need to say to them, and what is the one primary call to action, what is the one purpose of that page on the website, that sort of thing. That's always the hardest bit to sort of get right. And it's especially hard for business owners themselves, because they're thinking, when you're coming at it from inside your business, you're thinking about all the different parts of it, and it's hard to then put yourself in the shoes of the customer who's experiencing your business for the first time. That's one of the biggest challenges.
We get that a lot with some of the websites we deliver. You know, people, I understand when people are investing in a website, they obviously want the best website that they can get. And we get a lot of requests for people to, you know, to, can you include this widget, or I've seen this piece of software, or can it do this for me? And, you know, can it do the washing up and all that kind of stuff?
Yep.
And actually the sort of the right advice is to say, well, we can make it do that, but only if that's going to help you, your business, or your customers. And if it doesn't fit one of those three criteria, if it's just something you want on your website because you've seen it online and it looks cool, well, that's not actually a reason to include it in your website.
Yeah, and that's really a big key is questioning everything. I think you need to look at every part of that website and what they're asking and question it. Does it need to be there? Like, everything should earn its right to be there. It's got to prove itself. You should question it, and if it's not really important that it's up there in the header, then take it out.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And then you were dead right when you also talked about what's the purpose of each page, because, you know, the misconception is that everybody's going to land on your homepage and then take a journey through your website from there. The reality of it is, if you're structuring your website correctly for SEO, people come into your website all over the place. And it's about then the experience that you're giving them, and, you know, what is the call to action on this page? If people are searching for, I don't know, if people are searching for Nike shoelaces, then they're going to come in on a page that's about shoelaces. So what is the actions they can take off that page? You don't want them to end up in a dead end. So, you know, what's the conversion that you want, ideally, that you want them to make? But if they're not going to convert and they're going to click on something else, what are those things that they're going to click on? Where does that user journey start? So you're dead right by saying you need to question the functionality, but also the structure of the website, in order to make sure that you're not creating dead ends for yourself, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And distractions from the core goal. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big trap.
Too right. So you know, that's kind of the biggest one. What are the other things then that, you know, people have come to you and you've had to sort of consider or challenge with them in order to deliver a successful website?
Yeah, and this is probably a tip for people who are selling websites as well, is that quite often, I had this pop up recently, earlier today, that someone was talking about how that a customer had come to them saying that this website was going to be simple. You know, they just wanted this simple little thing. And that always raises a red flag for me, that people assume that, you know, getting a simple website is easy and cheaper to do than getting a big website with all the flashy bits. Because simplifying the website requires a lot of design thought, and like we've been talking about, getting it down to just its bare essentials and that sort of thing. And that's really just as hard to achieve as a more complicated website from some points of view. And it's important to simplify a website, but it doesn't mean that making a simple website is easy. They look at they look at examples of other websites and go, "Oh, this one's nice and clean and simple, but I want it to have this and this and this and this and this and this," and just start going, "Oh no."
I know exactly what you mean. And the other thing is, you know, they look at a website and they. We've recently built a website for a company that. They operate a small number of holiday homes. And what they've done is they've gone and looked at like a national player in the UK for people that take bookings for holiday homes, and said, yeah, we want all of that functionality. And then you say, okay, what's your budget? And they say like $4,000.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, that national player, they'll spend that per day on development and functionality and this, that and the other, and marketing and you name it. That it's taken them years to get there, and whilst we know we want to deliver you a solution that's going to work from end to end, that's probably the wrong benchmark. So if you want to have that as your benchmark for 2 years, 3 years, when you can spend that kind of money, we'll go for it. We'll go there with you. We've not got a problem with that. But for actually what's the minimum viable product that you're trying to set up here, you don't need 2/3 of the stuff they've got on there. That's all just for... That's all because they can, and because they've got the business that'll support it. You're just going through this setup of this new company. So do you want to kind of run through then, if I am XYZ customer, so I'm one of your new clients coming to TuneWP, what's kind of the process then that you're going to take me through to deliver a new website for me?
Well, one of the first things that we often do, and this is something that I've introduced with the new brand, is having an audit service. And we look at websites across six different key criteria. And one of the things that I've been working on is trying to come up with a sexy name with these. At the moment, I've got Kazurskur. It needs a lot of work.
Let's hit pause, go and have 15 beers, and then come back and say that again.
So the six things are conversions, speed, SEO, security, responsiveness, and control. So I don't know how to make that into something cool, but they
you
are...
You need some vowels, mate. That's what
But they are the six important things, really. And going through them, like, obviously conversions is one of the main reasons that you have a website is to achieve a certain business result. Usually, well, I'm working with businesses, and so that's what why they have a website. So conversions is a key part of that. And there's sort of three sub areas of conversions. One is the design, the flow, the branding, and that sort of aspect of it, the customer experience. The other is, and this is something that's often not done right. I find that this is one area that I always am able to improve, is building in more authority and trust and social proof and that sort of thing. Trust is still a really important part of websites because people are skeptical on the internet. And people want to do business with people they know, like, and trust. So that is a really key element of conversions. And then also having a good strategy and a funnel in place and some sort of lead magnet and thinking about what's your main offer and that sort of stuff. So that conversions is one big part of it. The other thing is speed. Now, everyone in the website arena has been, you know, has been, speed has been top of mind for the last year or so at least, and it is becoming really important, and Google's making it more and more important in their algorithms, not just for SEO but also for paid clicks and that sort of thing. And just customer experience, it's important for that. And then, yeah, so there's other aspects of SEO. So that's the other thing is, yeah, making sure that you're ticking all the boxes and doing the right things, making it, you know, structuring it correctly to be found by your customers when they're looking for you. And then security is an important factor as well. There's a lot of malware and viruses out there, and it's pretty embarrassing if your site does get hacked and has strange stuff happening to it. Depending on the amount of how crucial your website is to your business, that can really, really give you a bad reputation, I guess, with the visitors who do see that sort of thing or get spam sent to them from you or whatever.
You know, security is one of those things. We offer sort of maintenance and care plans and stuff for some of the websites we build, and the. When it comes to, we always put security down on a proposal, and we've tried making it a compulsory part, and people didn't like it, so it's always there as an option. And the discussion we always have about it is, well, you know, but if it, I'm not paying you that kind of money just to update a few plugins on my website. And the response we always give back is, but you don't drive around in your car without insurance.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. there's stuff. The thing with the internet is that it's a changing dynamic. It's a sort of organic dynamic. And there's a lot of people out there. The majority of people out there are there to do good and just want to get on with their own thing and do an honest day's. You know, have an honest business, doing an honest day's work, all that kind of stuff. And there's a very small percentage of people that want to screw it up just because they can, and a lot of those people that want to screw it up aren't hackers that are trying to get into, you know, the CIA or anything like that. They're teenagers in bedrooms that are writing bots to go on the internet just because they can. You know, they've figured it out, and they cause hassle for the rest of us. But if you wouldn't drive your car without insurance, and therefore having, you know, paying, I don't know what your pricing plans are, but paying anything from a couple of hundred bucks a month up for security on your website, if something goes wrong and your website gets hacked, that is the best $200 you've ever spent.
Yep.
If you haven't spent it, then actually the costs for somebody like you or I to then go in, get the website, clean it out, find out where the issue was, secure the host, strip out the database if it's injected anything, all of that kind of stuff, you're talking about costs that are way more than anything you're going to pay for a structured security plan with proper backups. The backups that we provide, and I'm guessing yours are exactly the same, somebody rings me and says, hey, there's a problem on my website. I can roll it back to 6 o'clock this morning, right? Exactly. Is the problem there? Yes or no? If it is, right, we'll go back to 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Yesterday morning, and then 6 o'clock the morning before. And we can just keep on going back until we've find a clean version of the website. If we don't have that, we've got to take the infected thing and then manually go and strip it out. And there's thousands and thousands of files and tens of, or hundreds of thousands of lines of code. It's not easy.
No.
And you're dead spot on.
Yeah, the flip side of that as well is that if you don't have someone that you can who can fix that, or you know, in the first place prevent it from happening, but I have people come to me and they're at their wit's end because they've already wasted two whole days trying to work out what's going on and how to fix it, and being turned around by people who don't care about them anymore because they got cheap hosting and they got no one looking after their website and that sort of thing. You know, so and that there's that cost to, you know, that you're disrupting your business for 2 days is another factor that you're not even considering. Yeah. As well,
absolutely. When it comes to stuff like hosting, and you know, people say, right, look, I could host this for $4 a month or whatever it is. The simple fact, I could host it for free. The simple fact with all of that stuff is you get what you pay for.
Absolutely.
And you're literally getting a folder on a server. You're not in control of who else is on the server with you. You've got to remember that when you put your data onto a server, you're sharing an IP address with everybody else that's on that server. And if they're, you know, if you're not in control of who those people are, they could literally be doing anything from adult content sites to malware to I don't know,
email
anything
spam.
Literally anything, email spam, yeah, you name it. They could be using that IP address for anything. So you're putting your the public face of your website online, your website, in that mix. And If that's the business decision you want to make, well, then you get what you pay for. And if something goes wrong, you know what? There's not going to be many people there to help you. If you can just... The thing with hosting and that kind of thing is it's not mega expensive. We're not talking about sort of life-changing sums of money. And I know that all of the guys that I work with, you know, all of our care plans and hosting and all that kind of stuff, they're all reasonably priced. We're not talking hundreds or thousands of dollars a month. We're talking, you know, just a bit, you know... respectively, it's a bit more, that's all.
Yeah.
But you get a whole wealth of service for it.
Yeah, and when you compare it to the kind of costs that you are probably accruing in like a shop front, if you have one, or a warehouse, or, you know, in most of the business expenses you'd have in having a public presence for your business, aside from the website, would be far more expensive than, like, probably your security bill on your shopfront would be more expensive than what you're paying for your web hosting.
Absolutely. I must admit, coming from England, obviously this part of the world, and we've got GDPR that's affected us, it has made a lot of people think about how they're storing stuff online and the security measures they've got in place. So I guess we're maybe having a, because of what's happened legally over here, we're maybe having a slightly different discussion to maybe what you are with guys in Oz, because you've not had those kind of, it's not been brought to the front of people's minds quite so much or quite so publicly as it has been in this part of the world.
Yeah,
so
it's still cool. Because it's something that has been like, yeah, it has had global reach. All the policy updates happened all over the world, so the all those privacy policies and that sort of thing, we copped all that as well. So it is still something that's in front of our mind.
I bet our name became mud in your country then.
Yep.
Damn GDPR.
Yep. Yeah, so the other things on the list though were responsiveness, and so we have a look at how people's websites are coming up on mobile, and how it, whether they're loading fast, and also how that user experience is, how the navigation works on mobile, that sort of thing. And the last thing, and this is a bit more of, I guess this is the sixth thing, is control, and it's a bit more of a ideological stance I think that I have. But I think that it's very important for business owners to have full control over their website assets. And I think that that's something that... I know that you probably do this as well, and a lot of good agencies and developers do, but there's still a lot out there who don't, who try to, you know, control the domain and make it so the website is not able to be edited easily and those sort of things. And also even positioning myself against the likes of Wix and Shopify and stuff like that, where you're building your business on someone else's platform and they control and own the assets that you're using to run your business. I think it's very important that you have full ownership and control over your assets of that are bringing in all the money for your business.
That's exactly how the websites work that we have. You know, our contracts, our terms and conditions state that the website remains our what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of the word. They remain our property, intellectual property. That's the word I'm looking for. We control the IP, the intellectual property of the website, until the bill is paid for in full. And once you've paid off your website with us, it is then yours. Just as if you go and buy a car, when you buy the car, it is yours. When you buy the website from us, once that final bill is paid, it is your IP. It is your website. There's a few things we ask you not to do, like don't go and give it to another agency so they can go and then copy our model and that kind of thing. But other than that, it is your website. You own it.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to give people the option to have control over it. I give people every opportunity to take their website away from our service and control it themselves or give it to another developer if they're not happy with our service. I don't want to try and lock people in and feel like they have to deal with us, whether they like it or not. You know, obviously we make our services and our ongoing support so good that they never want to leave, but I don't want to feel like they, you know, we're holding them in.
Yeah, no, that's dead right. And, you know, to be honest, that's good for both parties because, you know, nobody, I say this loads, you know, we didn't set our business up to make life hard for ourselves. We set our business up so that we can work with the people that we want to work with the people that want to work with us. And we just want to get on and do a good job. We don't enjoy having phone calls with people where, yeah, sorry, this hasn't been done or that hasn't been done, or we're still waiting for this from you, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We enjoy just doing a good job making websites and running digital marketing for people and all of that. That's where we get our buzz. It isn't in the project management, weirdly. I think that's dead right. And that's the other beauty of using a platform like WordPress, is that you're not tied to that one developer. I used to work at an e-commerce agency, and we developed our own e-commerce platform, and that did give us a lot of flexibility. You know, there was very little we couldn't do with it if we had the time and the resource to develop it. Yep. But what it did mean was that every client was tied to that agency, and some projects just don't work out, and then you end up with people working on things that they don't want to be on with people they don't want to be working with. And it creates such a big tension. It's really not worth the hassle.
No. I've had a few websites that have come to us because, those kind of relationships have broken down, and it's just not a fun experience. And sometimes it can get dragged out for far too long. It just makes people bitter, and it's no good for anyone involved at all. If it's not working out, you want to be able to just go, okay, this is not working out between us, you need to go find someone else, or, you know, vice versa.
too right. So I fully agree with you on that. So look, I hope the new business how's it gone since we met a few weeks ago?
Have been going
on your
really
return
well.
To Oz.
Yeah, it took me quite a while to get back in the swing of things. Had a lot to catch up on after traveling around Europe for a bit. But things are going well. And we've got getting a lot of good feedback on the new sort of way we're doing things. And so I'm pretty positive heading into next year that this is going to be a winner. Yeah.
That's cool. That's great. And I'm right in thinking that if you go to your website, which is tunedupwp.com, there'll be a link in the show notes. Also got people can inquire about having an audit done on their website, can't they? So you can order one. I'm looking at it now. You can order one online. So I'll drop a link to that in the show notes as well, so that people can find it, and it gives you a bit more detail about what you do under each of those sections.
Yeah.
So sure. Just obviously this podcast, it has a lot of marketing consultants listening to it. And the thing with marketing consultants where they get sort of trapped a little bit is that, you know, they'll have a client of theirs, which they're doing marketing for in general. So that might be content creation, or it might be PR, or it might be, you know, delivery marketing strategy, whatever it is. And then the client says, we want a new website, and you're in marketing, so you're going to manage it for us.
Hmm.
I know, obviously, we've mentioned a few things before, but if you're sort of landed with the job of getting a website together, what's the kind of advice you could give about starting to work with somebody like yourself? What are the things you need to be open to? What are the priorities you need to be considering? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so there's a few tips I could give here. One is, firstly, to start off with the project, it's good to get as much information about that customer and their situation as possible before you can go to a developer like me or any other development company. And get them to give you a quote or work out what's the best solution for the customer. It's hard to do that with just a little bit of information. And it's also one thing that I see quite a lot, and this is where a lot of quoting comes unstuck, is that people just think about, oh, how many pages we want. We'll need an about, a services, a blog, and a home, and, you know, this sort of thing. But you also need to think about what sort of content you're actually going to put on those pages. Is the homepage going to be just 4 quick sections, or is it going to be a massive long page with 8 sections to it? And, is your... Just have a think about your services page. Is it going to be just, is it really simple where you've just got a couple of images and a few paragraphs of text and a button? Or do you need a few different sections to really explain how your services work and the benefits and add some testimonials and all this sort of thing? So having a think about how many sections to each page and how many pages are using the same types of templates, the same layout. So you might have 4 different services that are very much the same, so you can use the same layout for those. So having a think about those kind of considerations, it's hard to do that and think too much about the design in the initial sort of discussions with the client. But as much of that kind of information that you can give your developer, it's really going to help you get an accurate quote, and it's going to make that process a lot smoother. Yep. And you don't run into situations where they've quoted you something, then you go and maybe you're doing the design or you put together some wireframes, then hand it to the developer and they say, oh, actually, this is going to be twice as much to build as what we originally, you know, estimated. So those...
You're dead right.
Yeah, that's certainly something I'd give as a tip at the start of the project. But another big thing is throughout the lifetime of the project, you really want to communicate as much as possible, and to the point where you're over communicating. You should be communicating even when nothing's going on and there's nothing to update. It's good to just send an update, and the developers should do this as well if they're good. It's something that I think we can always improve on, but giving an update, because quite often, you know, it'll be 3 weeks where there's not much that you can say to the client apart from, yeah, we're still working on it. But it is worth saying that. It is worth saying, look, we're still working on it. We're on track. It's another 3 weeks before we'll have anything to show you. But everything's going good for the moment. And that just gives them a bit of reassurance that, they're being looked after and it's not all going haywire and that sort of thing, because people do get a bit anxious. They've seen the designs. They're like, yes, this is awesome. I want to get it as soon as possible. And if you can just give them those little updates, then they're not going to get worried about what's going on.
You know what? I actually had that very conversation yesterday afternoon with a client where they, we have been giving them updates. We're partway through a build for them. And what we do with ours is we have an online staging environment.
Mm.
And we actually push live to that, or push live to staging, multiple times throughout the development window, so we can then go back to the client and say, look, here's your staging link, the website's not complete, these are the templates we've done, we've still got these that we're working on, but look, you can see it, you can start to get a feel of how it's going to work. And then once we've built the whole thing, we're going to do a responsive check, so don't worry if, you know, something's slightly out of line when you look at it on your mobile or whatever, we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But at least you can see that we're working on it, you know, you're keeping us honest, we haven't just disappeared into the thin air, and you know, we're not going to sort of cobble this together on the last day before it's due. We're working on it, and you can keep up to date with it there, and we'll be in touch when we're finished, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think that sometimes I would be careful about the types of clients that I would do that with, because sometimes they will just come back at you with questions and suggestions and changes anyway. But I guess that's part of managing. I guess I probably got burnt in the early stages of working on this when I wasn't so wise, and so I just decided, right, no, the client's not seeing anything until it's actually, you know, shiny, we've polished it. Yeah, I think it's safer that way. It just reduces confusion and getting a mess.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
But also with those timelines, another really good thing, especially for a marketing agency, if they're working with other developers, it's always good to build in a buffer zone with the expectations, because quite often developers are ambitious in how much they can get done in a certain amount of time, and also the things go wrong.
Everything takes 5 minutes, doesn't it?
Exactly. So it is always good that if the developer tells you, you know, it's going to be ready on the 10th, you tell the client we'll have something ready to show you on the 14th. And that way, if everything goes well, you can say, oh, we actually done it early, and the client will be pleasantly surprised. But otherwise, if the developer's late, which, you know, there's a good chance, then you've got a couple of days up your sleeve, and the client can still get it on time that they're expecting. Yeah. Yeah.
We have a saying in England, which is to under promise and over deliver.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're talking about there. Yeah, under promise. Build yourself in a little bit of a buffer, and then you know, if you can deliver it early, everybody's going to be happy.
Yeah.
So absolutely. That's fully agree with that. Fully agree with that.
Yeah.
So Brill. Sorry, go on, mate.
Oh, it's just one of those things that I've learnt from trial and error over the years.
Tell me about it. I remember once, well, I had to get some sleep. We'd committed to pushing this booking system live for this this event where they were selling tickets in different enclosures. It was for an air show, so they had different enclosures around the site. Mm. So they had this, we'd built this plugin that dynamically created the seats that were available in each enclosure, because each enclosure would have different numbers of rows and different numbers of seats in each row. Mm-hmm. So this plugin would dynamically build those. So you literally put in how many rows, how many seats per row, and then once it had generated it, you could then block out if there weren't seats available. So I don't know, like from the front row, for example, you might have every third seat might be for wheelchair access or whatever, so it's not bookable, that kind of thing. Mm. So you could then remove seats. And this thing had to be live at 7 a.m. one morning. Why we committed to 7 o'clock in the morning is absolutely beyond me. And it just went... there was a team of us working on it, but then we started... even with the version control in place, we started to trip up over each other. Mm. So in the end, I sent everybody home, and I just got on with it. And I ended up sleeping on the floor for about 90 minutes at 2 in the morning, just to, because I needed some sleep.
Mm.
And then getting up at like 3:30, 3:45, making another very strong coffee and cracking on again. And it went live at like 10 to 7. Yeah. And the client hadn't tested it. Nobody other than me had tested it, mm-hmm. but it was due to go live. And because they had publicity that said, tickets go on sale now, it had to be up. It had to be done.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just one of those things, you know, there was some things, even when we were mapping it out and doing the dev documentation and stuff beforehand, mm-hmm. there was just some challenges you just don't realize you're going to face until you get there.
Nah, that's it. You can't plan for everything.
And this is the thing, you know, when people say, look, you're a developer, you know how stuff works. It's like, we do. You're right. We know how code works. Mm. But the thing is, if you imagine that putting a website together is a bit like doing a jigsaw puzzle, the thing is, though, you can't see the finished picture. So you've not got the box lid in front of you saying, right, so that's a corner piece that goes over there, or that's an edge piece, or that's a middle bit that goes in this... you don't have that. You've got to make the pieces to make the jigsaw.
That's a good analogy. Yeah. Because you know how to work it out, but you might end up with this little bit of blue sky, and you're like, where the hell does that go?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then you finally get that bit of blue sky to fix, and then you realize that it's knocked off three other bits of blue sky that you fitted like 4 days ago.
and you can't remember how they worked. So you've got to go back. And believe it or not, code is really dull to read.
Yeah. Absolutely. Be one little dot.
I know. So, you know, a lot of clients don't require that level of complexity in their websites. And, you know, putting things together that we would seem as quite simple, you know, you can hammer on through it and you can say, yeah, it'll be done by Thursday. You get it done by Tuesday lunchtime and everybody's happy. There's not a problem. Mm. But it's just if you don't build in those periods of we call it FAT, actually, F-A-T, faff around time. FAT.
Ah, yeah.
If you don't build in that element of FAT into your timescales, then what happens is you end up tripping over yourself somewhere. And inevitably, it's on the complicated jobs, and the complicated jobs are the people that are paying you the most money. So they're banging on the table saying, do you know how much money I'm paying you for this?
Yeah.
And you have to deliver. So that's you're really doing everybody a favor if you can, you know, get a bit of freedom and fluidity built in there.
That's it. Just makes life easier for everyone.
Less too stress. Right, too right. So there is one other question I did have, which is I've got your website open in front of me, so TuneWP, and obviously I get the whole tuning thing, and I get the link to automotive. But is somebody in your organisation a bit of a cars fan? Because I'm a bit of a petrol head, and frankly, I'm looking at the pictures of Ferraris and stuff a little bit more than I'm reading the text.
No, I don't think so, really. And to be honest, I'm not. But I did just think it was a good analogy, and it's something like I am. I don't know. I've always felt like I'm hopeless with. When it comes to cars, but I'm really good when it comes to computers. So for people who are more cars people, it's probably a good way to relate to them. You know, like this is what we're building here is a website that's under the hood, high performance vehicle, and you can just choose the modifications that suit you and that sort of thing. And I think there's a lot of good things you can. Similarities between owning a car and owning a website, things like, you know, needing to have the regular services and the fact that if you look after it, you do get a better performance out of it and you save money and you know all these sort of things like that.
Cool.
So I thought it was a good one.
Cool. No, awesome, mate. Look, thanks for your time. I'll let you get to bed because it's now probably heading for midnight where you are.
Yeah, close.
And thanks for your time. If people, are you in our Facebook group?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, of course you are. Yeah. So you can find Justin in the Facebook group, PeteEverett.com/group. I'll get that shameless plug out the way. But if people did want to reach out to you online, mate, how can they find you?
Send an email to support@tunewp.com. That's my main email. It's also the email of the rest of my team, so we all just man that or jump on LinkedIn or Facebook. Yeah, they're the main places I hang out.
Awesome, fantastic. Well, I've been semi tapping up show notes as you've been talking, so there's already a link to your website in there, so head on over to the show notes link. It'll be in the intro or the outro because I'm not 100% sure which episode you're going to be yet, and there'll be a link you can get through to your website and contact you from there. Mate, thank you so much for staying up. If you I suggest you go and get yourself a nice shot of, I don't know, we've got into we're back into the gin at the minute, so go and get yourself a nice G&T and it'll just help you nod off slowly thinking of grey England.
That sounds pretty good.
Cheers, mate. I appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Justin, thanks so much for your time. What an awesome episode. Show notes for this episode can be found at PeteEverett.com/028. And please come and join us in the Marketing Development Facebook group at PeteEverett.com/group, or just search Facebook for the Marketing Development Podcast. Justin's in there, and I'm sure he'd be more than happy if you hit him up with a few questions if you've got some. We'll see you next week.